I've got this really great gun. Shit, where is it? No, it's really great. Wait, shit, where is it? Anyway, it's just a 38, but it's a gun. You can make a statement wrong with the gun. Even if you fail, it tells you who you are, where you stand. This one was on sale, it, no, not the shoe. Well, actually, the shoe was too. No, that's not it. Shit, I had it here, got it. Yeah!
Hi, everybody. I'm Susanna Mars, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am sitting in the Whisper Room at Artist Repertory Theater. It's the inaugural use of this crazy little tiny room where we can record things such as podcasts and so forth. And I'm with Vin Chambry and Nate Cohen and E.M. Lewis, who I will now refer to as Ellen.
Yes.
Because she said I could.
Please.
And we are here because the Gun Show, which had a run at Coho earlier in the year, is now going to go on a U.S. tour, and then it is going to go to Edinburgh, Scotland, which is incredible.
We're so excited.
I can't. It just sounds incredible. How did this all come to pass? Nate, you're the producer. What the heck?
Yeah. It was mostly like a late night bar conversation. Mm-hmm. Where we were feeling like we had this thing, this important, beautiful, powerful thing that we didn't want to just be done with it. And so we were all sitting at a bar one night and talking about what we wanted to do and what we thought it could become, and mentioned that we like the idea of going to the Fringe sounded really amazing. Mm-hmm. to all of us. And we did this sort of like, well, what if we took the show to Edinburgh? And we were like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. And then we sort of thought about it, and it kind of just kept digging in deeper and deeper. And at some point in December or so, we sat down again and we were like, we all actually want to do that. So let's make that happen. And we got really lucky. We reached out and applied, actually, and we're doing the show through a presenting organization in Edinburgh called The Space. Mm-hmm. Which seeks out cool international performance stuff. And so we have a primetime slot at one of their venues, and it's starting to feel very real.
It's so real. All right, so now you have a wonderful performance of the piece here at Artist Rep on July 1st. Mm-hmm. That people can come kind of say, hey, farewell, have a wonderful tour.
Yeah, and much more. Mm-hmm. We have a raffle, mm-hmm. a bunch of
awesome things.
Exciting mm-hmm. things where you can, how does it work? The raffle?
Yeah, well, so there's a couple of things we're going to do. We're going to have a silent auction for some stuff, and then we're also going to have one of those raffles, but it's the, like, pick what you want to put your ticket in raffles.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so there's, like, a couple of things, and you can buy 10 tickets, and you can put them all in one, or three in each, or something
And this
like
is
that.
All to help fund you all to get to Edinburgh,
to get
and
there.
Also the tour in the U.S., which is going to include, is it Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. also Salem, Oregon? Mm-hmm.
Well, we're still piecing together.
Willamette University.
Mm-hmm. We're going to so after the July 1st show, we're going to DC. I guess mm-hmm. I'm not coming with you guys for that one. They're going to DC.
Oh.
I have to teach. No, it's the worst. Children, God.
You're preaching to the choir,
shaping
Nate.
Young minds. But yeah, so we're going. The first stop is DC, mm-hmm. and then we're going to Edinburgh,
mm-hmm.
and then when we come back, we're going to the next stop is Salem, and mm-hmm. then from there we've been in conversation with a number of different theaters in New York, theaters in LA,
mm-hmm.
Theaters in Chicago, and we're it's not going to be the sort of traditional tour model where we're on the road for months and months and months. It's mm-hmm. going to be more like we have a couple of months and then we go do a quick 2-week run somewhere, and then we have a couple of months and then we do a weekend through someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk a little bit about the previous run and mm-hmm. other places where you've done the show and what you've learned so far and what you're thinking you're reaching toward in the future. Incarnations of the show?
Well, I wrote the show about 4 years ago now, mm-hmm. and time goes so fast. And it's been produced 14 times since then across mm-hmm. the country. And half of those have been with the version with me in it, with the actor. The other half have been the solo version. And I love working with it. I've never written anything like this. Nothing so messy and personal and political and immediate. And it's always scary to do, and it's always very present tense. But I have to say there is something particularly special about this production that we were lucky enough to do at Coho, and I was lucky to do with this team of actor Vin Chambry is just amazing. Sean Lee, our director, was totally right. He said, I've got this guy.
He'd be here if he could be Spider-Man and hang from the ceiling.
The There's not room in the Whisper Room.
We love Sean Lee, by the way. He asked me to say something nice about him.
He's a nice dude.
We really like him a lot. He's a great guy.
But this Oregon team, you know, I'm an Oregon farm girl, and Vin is an Oregon city boy. We're from here, and this story is about the world and America and politics, but it's also about this rural-urban divide, and it's about that. So super fantastic to have been able to do the play here in Portland and then to take this team to work with these guys who are awesome and take them beyond.
I'm curious about the stories that you wrote. They're from your personal experience. And then how you two kind of continued to, you know, experience the stories together. What was that like, Vin?
First of all, I think I like to say that this is my passion project. And I've actually been saying that a lot to a lot of people. It means so much to me, not just because of the words. The playwright means everything to me. I get to be on stage with the playwright in the audience, going through it every single day. So for me, it's so thrilling, and it's very therapeutic, and her words are truth. So for me, I'm really blessed to be in this position to be the artist. I think just the opportunity of what Ellen's words have given me as an artist is the fact that I can not only stand up there and tell my story as a man of color, but tell her story, because that's what I'm here to do, tell her story, but I can represent so many people in doing it. So, and it's through her writing. It's the way that it's presented. It's presented to all types of parties that you fight for or you don't fight for, but she's not afraid to let us just be in the middle and talk about the conversation so we can get to an understanding. And
I really liked, I read a little bit about the show, and I like the idea of when people have an opportunity to listen to a story, then they are digesting it, and then they feel prepared and interested in engaging in a conversation after, and that you're giving people that opportunity. And what have you learned in those post conversations, and how has that been?
Well, it's what are the things you're not supposed to talk about? Probably guns and politics and violence
in one room.
I mean, all kinds of things come into it, and the show ends messily on purpose because it's everything I got. It's five personal stories, and they get more personal as you go along and messier as you go along and more complicated, which is how I feel about guns in America. And then we hand it to the moderator and the audience and say, these are my stories. What are your stories? And we don't ask them their political opinions about guns because really that's not getting us anywhere. The shouting is not getting us anywhere. But the personal sharing of stories has been intimate and beautiful. Nate can probably.
I mean, those talks are so, I struggle with them every time I go out there to do them. Because what we learned really quickly is that, you know, everyone has one. Everybody who sees the show has something. And you know that some of them are going to be beautiful, sweet stories about grandpa and whatever, and some of them are going to be heartbreakingly tragic stories. And the play is asking a room full of strangers to hold space for each other's experiences. And that's an incredibly hard and profound and powerful thing that
and timely
and this is, I mean, you know, Ellen was right. This is this third rail thing. You know, you don't ask people about this because you're gonna disagree and it's gonna go badly. But we have more guns than people in America. We have 40 million more guns than human beings. So this is this thing. It's this thing that is burrowed into our cultural zeitgeist, you know, mm-hmm. into our understanding of our world as humans. And actually, most of us feel pretty similarly about it. You know, and there's a huge amount of room in the conversation to hear people and to agree with people and to understand people if the conversation can happen. Mm-hmm. And the conversation isn't happening. And that's what this play is doing, is saying, let's talk about it now.
Right. And it takes that one courageous person to set a platform for all of us to be able to share our stories. Mm-hmm. And that's what I believe the writing does. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's why it's so fun to do.
I can
And
imagine.
It changes every day, mm-hmm. with depending on the crowd. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always like to, especially in the Coho Run, I would really love to look at the middle-aged white men when they first come in, mm-hmm. because they look at the title, they see my face, and they say it's, you know, her stories, his words,
his voice,
yeah. Yeah, his voice. And I see it. I see they're like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And each story, I can see these layers from the audience of they really start to listen, mm-hmm. because they relate to part of it or some of it, or, you know, and so it's really nice at the end because I can see these men ready to engage, ready to share.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah,
what a transformational experience for you all and for the audience who attends.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I think we're also really excited to see what it feels like with an international audience.
I was wondering that same thing. It will be so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To come back, it would actually be really fun. Let's do another podcast when
yeah,
you guys
once
get
we're back.
Back.
Yeah, we'd
and
love to.
And say, hey, this is what we learned.
Well,
you know.
So what's interesting about that I just learned this. I've in preparation for us going to Edinburgh, I've started doing research on guns in the UK because mm-hmm. that's where we're going to be. And I just learned this through a connection we have that apparently the thing that changed guns in the UK, that mm-hmm. changed gun culture in the UK, was a Sandy Hook like. Mm-hmm. incident mm. that occurred about an hour and a half from Edinburgh in 1996.
Oh. Oh.
And so, and they went into just, okay, we're just going to ban, you can't own a gun anymore. No, handgun, just full, you can't own a handgun. Huh. Just zoop, that's it. We're making that change. And so what I learned from this person, who's a UK person, was that we were like, oh, I don't know, we're going to, you know, are we going to be able to find people who relate to this? And they're like, everybody in Scotland, that's like a thing. This was like the major thing in the British news cycle in 1996 for like 4 months. Mm. Like there's an absolutely vital cultural touchstone there mm. that's going to register for anybody over the age of like 25.
I would venture that any city where you did this show, you would have that same experience.
I think so, yeah.
Even coming down to the terribly personal of just a child, for instance, yeah. dying at the hand of another child who found a handgun. I mean, yeah. because there are these stories in every single
Absolutely.
Town. And I remember back when my kids were little, I think it was Kate had a friend over, and the mom came to the front door, and she said, oh, you know, here's so-and-so, and have a great play date, and I need to ask, do you have any guns, and if you do, are they locked up? And I thought, at first I kind of took umbrage, you know, I was like, oh, you think I'm not a mother who would take mm-hmm. care of guns. And then I thought, oh my goodness, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's really an interesting thing.
One of the groups who came to see the show at Coho was a group of young mothers mm-hmm. who had, remember them? They all got their picture with you.
Oh, how could you forget?
but they came in and they talked about that. We had a lovely conversation in the lobby and they said, okay, well, we talk about everything. We've been raising our kids together. And it came up one time for us is that, you know, somebody had read an article or seen something, you know, on television about guns. And they were like, oh, well, I don't have it. And then one of them said, we do have guns in the house. And yeah. so this group of young women had that conversation with each other, and then they came to the show because they were, you know, people are grappling from all kinds of different angles that you don't imagine, from veterans to mothers to people with teenage children who are in a volatile place to...
We had a gentleman and his daughter, and I'm sure you can speak to this. His wife was killed in the Clackamas Town shootings that happened a few years ago. Him and his daughter, they devoted their life to gun control after this, and they were there.
Yeah, he runs an organization called Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership. Mm. And she actually works with Gabby Gifford's group in Washington D.C. Mm-hmm. And they're from here, but and you know he does mostly local, and she goes all over the country doing advocacy and group discussions, and you know that's his fascinating perspective on it is I own them still, but you know what can we do that makes this safe for people? Because at the end of the day, the disconnect is around what makes you feel safe.
Yeah. Right.
And that's where the problem
comes
from.
Yeah, there's again, I always go back to Ellen's writing, is she says this really simple. She goes, what it comes down to is safety.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we really want. We want to be safe.
And that's such a beautiful way to put it.
That could be international. Mm-hmm. That's a human element.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we want. Yeah.
And I would venture that every single gun owner, no matter what their political leaning, has the exact same hope.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. We have more in common than we have that separates us.
Right.
Even in this divided moment in our country, in our world, and it feels very frighteningly divided right now, I believe that we have more in common with each other than we have that separates us, and that we can find it with each other.
I completely agree with you. And I have to keep just reminding myself.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there are factions, I think, that want to polarize us and not bring us to that compassionate way. And it's interesting. Guns, I think, bring up a funny personal thing about being a good person, you know, having, you know, when I took umbrage about the gun, you know.
One of the lovely things that the conversation after the show allows us to do is to hear such a variety of perspectives on the issue. Another guest that we had was the father of one of our local actresses, Lauren Modica. Her father, Kevin Modica, is in law enforcement here in Portland and has spent a lifetime working with young people and working as a police officer, but also sharing. And it was such a gift to have his perspective as well. And so it's...
Yes, absolutely. That blew me away because I have my own feelings about cops, me personally, but to hear he told a story that when he first started, that happened 20 years ago, but he remembers the smell where he was, the time, the specific gun he had, how far away this person was. It was just like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think to hear that, hear the other side of it was enlightened. It was good for me to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to hear all about the trip when you come back. And I know that everybody listening is probably going to be interested in seeing the show on July 1st here at Artist Rep to send you off. I was going to say with a bang, but that just doesn't. I guess that's perfect,
you know,
right?
My sister Maya Chambry, she is performing at the end of our show, and she's a part of a band called Jack Mortson, and she's the music entertainment.
It's gonna be the show is gonna happen, and then we're gonna have a party.
That's
we want people to come for that too.
Right.
And it's gonna be the band. There's gonna be the raffle. There's gonna be a booth set up where you can tell a gun story, and we'll record it and we'll use it.
Fantastic.
And we'll save it. We're gonna have.
Is that gonna be in this whisper room? I'm just.
I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure. We're gonna have a gun information table with a couple of the fight director people in town who we know.
Great.
Who are actually gonna have a couple of them, and you know, there are people who have never touched one, never held one. You know, it's a chance to sort of do that in a safe way. All sorts of really cool. And, you know, just chances to come hang out and learn more and talk and all those
things.
Be
with super amazing artists like you all.
I'd also like to take one second to thank some of the people who have been supporting our journey, because we've had, I don't know if it's been formally announced, but we received wonderful grants from both RAC and the Oregon Arts Commission.
Oh, that's great.
For which we are so grateful. We have also received some personal grants.
Yeah, from Rodney LeCroute.
Yay,
she gave
you.
Us a tremendous, amazing donation for us. So, and Harold Goldstein.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, without them, absolutely. They definitely put us in a great position.
And some other smaller donors as well, but it's coming together. It's coming together.
And this is something I always like to make a mention of, is that if you're out there listening and you'd like to participate financially in supporting programming like this, then reach out to the organization and be a part of it, because funding things like this can really make you feel terrific.
Yeah. And I do think we should plug Coho as well, just in terms of their support. They've never had a show that they co-produced that then went on to do this whole crazy tour thing. And so when we approached Philip about it, Philip Cuomo, the artistic director, he was just all in 100%. And they've been huge in terms of providing the admin support that we need to be able to actually do the crazy thing that we're trying to do.
Must be, I would venture that they're all pretty thrilled just
to
be part of it.
They're all pretty excited, too.
You know? As artists, I know when you see a piece that you have some way of helping, it's so exciting to see it blossom and flower.
Yeah.
You know? It's thrilling.
And the one thing I would say, because Sean will be really upset with me if I don't, is to follow us on Twitter and Instagram and
great.
Facebook. Yeah. So we're on the socials as The Gun Show Play.
Uh-huh.
So at The Gun Show Play. And both because there's lots of good information there about the project, and because when we're in Edinburgh, among other things, Vin's going to be doing like daily video updates about our
Facebook Live
and
things
fantastic.
Like that.
That's fantastic.
So people can follow along with us that way.
I think we need to have some kilts going on.
I actually own two.
What?
I actually own two kilts.
Okay, well, of course, I have to go there because I went to a high school where we were the Highlanders, and of course, we all know what goes on beneath kilts. Nothing. Just saying, are you going to go full frontal?
I mean, I'm part Scottish, so I feel like I have to.
Yeah, Nate, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes.
I feel like it's an
authentic
stipulation.
And maybe that could be part of
Scotland.
That live Facebooking.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. We got to sell some tickets.
Yeah. Nate's gearing up.
Yeah, right.
Or gearing down.
I guess. One or the other.
Right.
Actually, yeah, the best way to do it, just because it's all in one place then, is through the Gun Show website, which is www.thegunshowplay.com.
Great.
And that has full ticketing links for the Portland show, for the other ones that we have set up already. Mm-hmm. If anybody's like, oh, I'm not going to be in there in Portland, but I'll be in D.C. 2 weeks later or something like that.
And the show is going to be on July 1st at Artist Rep at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And come a little bit early, grab a glass of wine, hang out with your friends. There's going to be music afterwards. It's really a party atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then soon after that, you will be July 6th through 16th at the Logan Festival of Solo Performance in Virginia. August 4 through 28, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, presented by The Space UK at Space Triplex Studio Theater. And then December 1 and 2, Willamette University in Salem, Oregon.
Yeah.
Lots of opportunities to be a part of this incredible show. And thanks, Ellen, for being such a wonderful, brave artist to write about this and put this conversation forward in such an incredibly open, exciting way.
Well, I'm grateful to this team. This is all I want to do, is tell stories and work with wonderful people. And I'm a lucky playwright.
Yes, well,
I'm able to do so.
I'm so glad. Yeah, thanks, Nate and Vin, for joining me, and Ellen, of course, and Sean and Dave Peterson, our incredible audio tech, who navigated this whisper room for us, which is really fun. I wish I had a bottle of champagne to break over it. I've got this really great gun. Shit, where is it? No, it's really great. Wait, shit, where is it? Anyway, it's just a 38, but it's a gun. You can make a statement wrong with the gun. Even if you fail, it tells you who you are, where you stand. This one was on sale. It, no, not the shoe. Well, actually, the shoe was too. No, they're